Hi, Peace and Justice Show here. This is Chris, and I have a new host to present to you today, Corey Himpont, who's going to be interviewing Dr. Lisa Johnson in the first segment of the Peace and Justice program, and then again at 12:30, he'll be interviewing Eric Chesler. And Dr. Lisa, he will introduce in the next tract. I want to thank Stevie Wonder for being with us all these years and standing up and giving us some guidance there with his new CD. And let's just go ahead and listen to Corey and enjoy new voices here at KZFR as we have our pledge drive today. And we would love it if you would go to the go online to kzfr.org and press the donate button, or call us here at 601-340-5937 in support of public affairs programming here at KZFR. Thanks. Here we go.
Everyone, my name is Corey Hunt. You may know me as Hempsey. I've been in the Chico area since about 1995 after coming up from Southern California as a teen. I consider myself an activist, a rapper, a poet, among many other things, and through them all, a seeker and speaker of truth. I identify as a black man and respectfully acknowledge the land where I reside, so-called Chico, California, is occupied Machupta territory. I'd like to thank Chris Nelson and KZFR for inviting me to share my opinions and thoughts and those of others I capture on this platform. I'm currently calling this Sapient Sessions, a program where I sit with educators, professionals, activists, and other sapient citizens, as Professor Gibbons from Butte College would call them, and pick their brain on a myriad of topics to share ideas with you all that hopefully foster our understanding as a community. In this inaugural segment of Sapient Sessions, I had the privilege of sitting with the incomparable sapient citizen that is the one and only Dr. Lisa Johnson. Dr. Johnson holds a PhD in sociology from the University of Nebraska in Lincoln. She has only been in Chico for 4 years and is now an assistant professor in sociology at Chico State, specializing in race and ethnicity, social inequality, and sociological psychology. She is a black mother, activist, and critical race scholar who draws on her former experiences as a corporate manager, cult member, and closeted queer to help students question the society they live in. Dr. Johnson is a gem that, over the 4 years she has been in Chico, has nourished so many citizens into healthier ways of thinking about themselves and our world. I'd be remiss to start this series any other way. We had some minor technical difficulties with internet connection. I did my best to cut the noise and keep the content of what I thought was a very informative exchange. The doctor and I spoke about how everyday folks can affect change, her experiences as a black woman educator from Georgia moving to Nebraska, then Chico, thoughts on the election, the importance of understanding identity, particularly one's own, and much more. I thank you all for tuning in and hope you gain sapience from this session. With no further delay, this is Corey Hunt speaking with Chico State Assistant Professor of Sociology, Dr. Lisa Johnson. Can't thank you enough on behalf of myself and our community for all the work that you've done and continue to do in inspiring and being an inspiring and humbling example of a sapient citizen. When we were talking about setting this up, you said, so even if people swear they want to change the system, they find that they are not willing to make the ultimate sacrifices to make the change take effect in real terms. And we were talking about doing this interview around respectability politics, and I felt like that really kind of just encapsulated my understanding of what that is. And so I wanted to give you an opportunity to speak to folks, you know, who hear respectability politics and they think of something positive and don't quite understand the full nuances and dynamics of what that is.
Okay, so yeah, thanks again. So with respectability politics, we understand that there are certain norms in society and in several groups within society that hold expectations for behavior for those group members. And so in order to maintain the privileges of membership, many of us uphold or abide by those norms and those expectations for behavior. To be a corporate manager, for instance, I used to be a contract negotiator. Mm-hmm. I needed to uphold the expectation to be coiffed, right? Very nicely. Mm-hmm. My hair had to be straight, mm-hmm. right? I was living in Atlanta, Georgia, and even as you can hear me speaking right now, I needed to sound as articulate as I possibly could, right? And my articulation needed to be able to reach across cultures, but it also needed to be able to uphold the standards of a white middle-class mainstream culture. Yeah. In order to represent my corporation effectively. When I was negotiating contracts, I was a transportation contract logistics negotiator. I needed to be able to come off as pleasing, happy, particularly as a Black woman. I needed to be able to dispel any idea of the angry Black woman, because this would make both my clients that I served and the people that I was negotiating with for services for my client, it would make them uncomfortable. So the expectation would be that I would always smile and I would always have honey flowing from my voice so that I could make everybody else comfortable, no matter what they said to me, no matter what they said about me, no matter whether they microaggressed against me, had racial jokes, comments about my body, comments about my legs, comments about my family, all of those I was supposed to be able to dispel with, you know, a lisp, a laughter, a sigh, you know, anything that could, once again, make the offender more comfortable. Okay, to make the offender more comfortable. And so that's what I'm speaking about when I talk about respectability politics. Quite often, we are lulled into conformity. But then that conformity also gives off an idea that we are conforming to a white supremacist ideal that says that immigrants, Black people, people of color, queer people are somehow, by their very nature, deviant, and then must adhere to the norms and standards of the hegemonic dominant group. I quit that job.
And now we are blessed to have you as an educator in Chico, California. This is Corey Hunt speaking with Chico State Assistant Professor of Sociology, Dr. Lisa Johnson. Would you like to speak to some of the difficulties that, you know, being a sociologist of your ilk and coming from your background of the South and so forth, and all the different dynamics that have been presented to you as an educator, you know?
Yeah, it's still a very isolating type of existence, being in Northern California. This is, I tell my friends back home, this is Trump country. I tell them at home, I see just as many rebel flags here as I did in Georgia.
I haven't been there. That's interesting to know. Interesting.
Yes. There are, you know, I take bus trips. I take road trips. I do all of the things. And I see, you know, rebel flags in Northern California quite regularly. And in Atlanta, we don't see rebel flags that often inside the city. Okay. We see them outside of the perimeter of the city. So there's a very heavy urban inside of 285, right? There's highway that encircles the main urban city area. And then outside of that, there are all of these little pockets of, right, of white supremacy that exist, or it just, you know, of different neighborhoods. There are a lot of that's where a lot of gated neighborhoods are. A lot of very, very affluent neighborhoods mixed in with some rural neighborhoods or some lower income neighborhoods. But quite often, when you're going, even like I used to go to University of Georgia. So if you travel from Atlanta an hour and a half to the University of Georgia, you knew that you had to have enough gas to make the whole trip.
This is Corey Hunt speaking with Chico State Assistant Professor of Sociology, Dr. Lisa Johnson.
That should.
So what was the, was it a bit of a culture shock coming from there to here, or was it kind of this, what was that like?
Well, I didn't come directly from there to here. That's okay. The funny thing. I moved from Atlanta to Somerville, South Carolina, right outside of Charleston.
Okay.
And had to go past the plantations to get to work in Charleston, right? Down Plantation Row. And then from there, I went to graduate school in Lincoln, Nebraska. Yes, with there was a 3% black population in Lincoln when I got there, and by the time I left, it was a 5% black population.
That seemed to have that effect. That's a great thing.
So yeah, so I came from here. I came from graduate school in Nebraska, the University of Nebraska, Lincoln. There was still a culture shock. Even coming from Lincoln, because when I came here, I thought I was coming to California. I did not recognize how stark the difference was between Northern California and the California that I had imagined in the back of my head.
Sure. Yeah, that even coastal.
Right. Mm-hmm. Even with understanding that there was a 2% black population here, I still, for some reason, thought that it was going to be different. Right. Mm-hmm. And the shock was, it was nothing that I could imagine. And then, of course, Desmond Phillips was murdered soon after I got here.
Okay.
So, my idea of California is shocking at this point because I live in NorCal.
This is Corey Hunt speaking with Chico State Assistant Professor of Sociology, Dr. Lisa Johnson.
So you mentioned Desmond Phillips, and that's kind of how I ended up seeing you around, was through that whole movement, as being a powerful leader, just speaking so eloquently and unapologetically. It was really inspiring and has helped me in a lot of ways. And I guess that brings me to my next question of, how do you think an everyday person can affect change? Because when I think about trying to do that, you're one of the first minds that come to, and your actions are the first things that come to mind.
We just talked in my race and ethnicity course yesterday about self-care, about respectability politics, about being yourself, and about the idea that each of us has different identities, right? We have a different identities, and we have an identity hierarchy. So, for instance, in some instances, you know, when my son comes to town, I'm black mama, right? But he's not in town quite often. So that identity as a mother is not enacted quite often. I am a teacher. Right. That's an identity that's really prominent for me. An activist that's prominent for me. And my emotional display. Right. I feel free to say when I'm angry, when I am sad. I'm learning. I'm going through sessions now to help me feel OK with crying, right? Because this is not something that black people really, you know, get a hold of. We don't get a hold of the idea that we can be vulnerable enough to cry. So I am learning at this point to cry when I'm sad. And what I talk to my students about is that there are norms and expectations about emotional display according to the groups that we're in. And according to the ways that we identify or enact our racial our identity hierarchies, right? So one of the things we understand is that, you know, once again, it's not okay to be angry. We tax heavily when we show anger. Okay, so this this racial hierarchy has not done anything for me. So I don't owe this racial hierarchy anything, right? So, you know, coming to that realization means that I feel free, and I try to inspire my students to feel free to feel what they feel, right? What you are feeling is valid. Now, conformity would try to press upon them to play their emotions as they are feeling them. Right. But you can't address something you don't see. You can't address something that you're taught to hide. And so in many ways, their emotion, the hiding of their emotional display is an act of the reproduction of inequality. Okay. Because yes. You teach lower class, lower income people not to share how they feel, then they can't get to the reasons they feel it. Right? Yes. And a lot of times the reasons that they feel stress, the reasons they feel anger, the reasons they feel alienation are because of the inequalities that exist in the society.
Yes.
Right? So this is one of the things that, you know, I try to teach people all the time. Feel what you feel, what you feel, your feelings are valid. Show them as, you know, you give yourself allegiance to show your feelings and then talk them out. Don't let anybody sort of, you know, poo-poo you into being who they want you to be rather than being who you
So I'm catching a little bit of freezing up here. Hopefully the words get through because, yeah, I'm loving it and really it's resonating.
This is Corey Hunt speaking with Chico State Assistant Professor of Sociology, Dr. Lisa Johnson.
You talk about feelings. And I imagine people are going to be having, you know, a myriad of feelings here in the next couple of days as the elections come through and you know, what they're weighing on that and how that's affecting them. And so speaking to the elections coming up and how that's going to affect people. And I was wondering, what you thought would be the most efficient manner of behavior and action here in these next coming days, weeks, and months?
I am a real great proponent of open discussion. And I know that open discussion is very difficult. Very, very difficult. But I don't think that we're going to get past the issues in our society unless we are open and honest. So whoever wins, because we really, really don't know who's going to win right
there. Agreed.
Right? We do not know. Whoever wins, both sides need to be able to grieve.
Yes.
Both sides need to be able to grieve. Both sides need to be able to celebrate. Both sides need to be able to figure out how we're going to move and be and feel in the next 4 years. Because we can't decide how to behave if we don't understand how we're feeling.
Okay.
So what I would suggest is that we do a lot of soul searching. What exactly is it that is making me so, if Biden wins, what exactly is it that's making me so happy that Biden won?
Okay.
And what is it that I'm going to call for in Biden's administration?
Indeed.
If Trump wins, what exactly is it that's making me so sad, for instance, if you are sad? Because some people are not sad if Trump would win. Right.
Definitely.
This is a tight race. if people are sad that Trump is winning, what exactly is it? Because I don't think that a lot of us can point. We think we can, but we can't point to specific policies, or we can't point to specific, there's the talk about, oh, he's racist, mm-hmm. and, you know, the ways that he has treated women in the past. Okay. But what about the policies?
Mm-hmm.
What about, you know, the international relations? What is it that, if we are sad about Trump winning, what is it that we will do in the next 4 years? How are our really relating to that?
You broke up for me for about 10 seconds. I kind of lost you a little bit. What were you saying, though?
If Trump wins, what are our real feelings about that? And exactly why are we prone to feeling sad about a Trump win? What exactly are we going to do with those feelings?
Mm.
Are we going to bury them? Are we going to enact them? Are we going to put on some pink hats and run around the square again? Right? What are we, you know, come on, y'all. I mean, because I understand that we need to be able to express ourselves in any way that we can. Sure. And I am a protester. Okay. I'm a born and bred protester. My parents were protesters. You know, my cousins are really good at fussing and arguing in the streets. We are some loud people, and this is who I am. So I am not saying that we should not protest and we should not have demonstrations. I'm all about all of that. But when we use those protests to galvanize, to come together, to enact some type of change in our communities, that's when the protest is most effective.
Yes, so much.
Okay.
This is Corey Hunt speaking with Chico State Assistant Professor of Sociology, Dr. Lisa Johnson.
I'm doing this thing. I'm asking my guests if they could come up with three quick questions that they ask themselves or suggest people ask themselves around, you know, staying grounded, moving forward, and staying efficient. And then like a parable, a proverb, or cliche.
All right. Three things. Always listen to people less powerful than yourself.
Yes, ma'am.
Two, always search your feelings deeply, whether that is through journaling or recording yourself speak or some type of artwork that really explores your feelings.
Yes, ma'am.
Three, get involved with something.
Mm.
Do not just sit in your home.
Mm.
Or sit in front of the television and refuse to participate because things are not going your way.
Yes, ma'am. And lastly, a Lisa proverb.
I don't know a proverb, but I will share this saying.
Please.
It is not okay to devalue vulnerability.
Mm.
How about that?
Oh, I love it. I mean, you want to spend another 30 seconds and just elaborate on that real quick? That was beautiful.
We understand. I'm writing with a coworker in South Carolina right now about Harold's 5 D's. And they include defensiveness, distancing, devaluing, several different, you know, ways in which people dismiss people who are calling out injustices.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the biggest ways is that you try to shame or admonish other people and tell them that they should not be speaking up at that time, that they don't have the proper sentiment, they don't have the proper speaking skills, they don't have the proper writing skills, they're not dressed right, they're not whatever, right? Mm-hmm. When they are trying to show you their pain, okay? When people are most vulnerable is when they don't have all of the accoutrement to, you know, say things the right way or to write in perfect grammar or to do anything, you know, any of those respectability types of enactment. And yes. So it is our duty to actually hold vulnerable people up instead of devaluing them in their most vulnerable states. It is not okay to devalue vulnerability.
Not at all. Lisa Johnson, I can't thank you enough for sharing your wisdom with our community at Chico State and here on KZFR. And I thank you for your time and send you a million blessings.
Thank you so much, Corey. I appreciate all that you do.
Now, that is what I call a sapient session. Thank you so much to Dr. Lisa Johnson. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. This is Hemp C, Corey Hunt, Soapbox, signing out.
And thank you for that, Corey Hunt. That was amazing. Thank you, Lisa Johnson. This is the Peace and Justice Program. I am so grateful to be with you during this pledge drive. I ask that you call and support the station at 601-340-5937. Let's bring on that new generation of activists. And I'm so grateful to be part of this, and I hope you are too. You can also go online, kzfr.org, and press the donate button, and please support us. We had a small pledge drive on our 30th anniversary, but this is the real deal, and we do need your support because we're not able to do our usual fundraisers during COVID, and our needs to keep the station running are as real as they've ever been, so please give generously. I want to thank our underwriters, and that includes Chico Natural Foods Cooperative, offering a variety of organic and local produce, organic groceries, and supplements. The co-op has hot food, ready-to-eat sandwiches, and cold brew coffee. The co-op now accepts online orders for curbside pickup. Chico Natural Foods Co-op is open every day on the corner of 8th and Main in downtown Chico. And it is just about 1 o'clock. Oops, that couldn't be right. I think it's just about the hour before 1 o'clock. And this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. The opinions voiced on our program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers, and just ourselves. And I want to also thank the underwriters for the next half hour, an hour. I want to thank Farmstar Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farmstar features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts. They have vegan and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farmstar Pizza is open 7 days a week for to-go lunch and dinner orders. Find Farmstar Pizza at 2359 The Esplanade, at farmstarpizza.com, and on Facebook. The telephone number is, if you want to order, 343-2056. And also the Paradise Revival Festival on Saturday, November 8th and Sunday the 9th. Convening online, this event is facilitated by Regenerating Paradise for people in fire and disaster-affected communities and those engaged with regenerative community work. There is no cost to attend, and the festival is open to all who register. Visit regeneratingparadise.org for the details, times, and registration. And once again, please support KZFR. And I'm going to get our next guest on the line. This next is Nikki Giovanni. She is an incredible American poet, and it is her from her book of poetry, Make Me Rain. Here we go.
Vote. It's not a hug, nor a mistletoe at Christmas. It's not a colored egg at Easter, nor a bunny hopping across the meadow. It's a vote, saying you are a citizen. Though it sometimes is chocolate or sometimes vanilla, it can be a female or a male. It is right or left. I can agree or disagree, but, and this is an important but, I am a citizen. I should be able to vote from prison, I should be able to vote from the battlefield. I should be able to vote when I get a driver's license. I should be able to vote when I can purchase a gun. I must be able to vote if I'm in the hospital, if I'm in the old folks' home, if I'm needing a ride to the polling place. I am a citizen. I must be able to vote. Folks were lynched. Folks were shot. Folks' communities were gerrymandered. Folks who believed in the Constitution were lied to, burned out, bought and sold, because they agreed all men were created equal. Folks vote to make us free. It's not cookies nor cake, but it is the icing that is so sweet. Good for the folks, good for us.
Okay, and so we did it. We voted, and now we're going to see how this all pans out for us. I have on the line with me Harvey Wasserman. He's an American journalist, author, democracy activist, and advocate for renewable energy. And he's been a strategist and organizer in the anti-nuclear movement for over 30 years. He was part of the people that brought you the phrase "no nukes" back in '74 when he was trying to stop the Seabrook nuclear power plant from going in. He's the author of over 20 books, but he's also done 6 books just on election protection, including The Strip and Flip Disaster of America's Stolen Elections. His website is www.solartopia.org, and he's also a radio host. He has a radio show, Green Power and Wellness, which is a podcast, and California's Solartopia, broadcast on KPFK Pacifica Station in Los Angeles, which I listen to all the time. So welcome, Harvey Wasserman.
Well, it's great to be with you, especially on a day like today.
Oh, I know. This is so exciting, the timing on this. And, you know, your website, Election Protection, provides Americans from coast to coast with comprehensive information and assistance at all stages of voting, from registration to absentee and early voting, casting a vote at the polls, to overcoming obstacles to their participation. Now, it's all about seeing and working toward the last part of this, which is getting those votes counted. And yesterday I was in on a 2-hour call with you and just an amazing number of allies. And I just wanted to, I don't know where you want to start, but this grassroots emerging election protection movement is very important because the Democrats didn't do it. What do you want to say about that?
Well, you're 100% right, and I will say that Donald Trump is leaving the White House. You know, I hope they inventory the silverware and the sheets and stuff, because I'm sure that Trump Mafia is going to probably walk off with all the furniture. You know, we wouldn't have been getting him out of there if it wasn't for election protection, because since 2000 in Florida, the Republicans have been stealing the elections. We are nonpartisan. I mean, the Democrats steal the primaries so they can stop people like Bernie Sanders and AOC, and then they can't stop the Republicans from stealing the general election. And we're still stuck with this ridiculous electoral college. Our website, I'm so glad you were on the call, is grassrootsep.org, GRASSROOTSEP for election protection, .org. And people can go there and check out all the information. We will be doing more Zoom calls. We've had 25 Zoom calls of an hour and a half. Some have been 2 hours. And they're all archived there. But we're going to do another one on Monday at 2 to 3:30 p.m. on Pacific time. Anybody wants to join in, you can actually write me, Chris. Your listeners can, and you can too, at solartopia@gmail.com. That's my address, solartopia@gmail.com. And if you write me, I'll send you a free PDF of my History of the United States. It's called The People's Spiral of U.S. History. I finished it in the summer, and my conclusion was all this stuff about how Bernie Sanders was going to remake the world, and then things kind of changed. But here we are, so I'm going to finish it after Trump leaves the White House. And we'll have it available. I'll send you a free copy, anybody who writes me, Solartopia@gmail.com. So this is a day of celebration, of liberation. I will say that Joe Biden, for what it's worth, actually going to have a margin of more than 4 million votes. It's actually one of the biggest margins in U.S. history. You know, Obama had two really big ones, but very few presidents in U.S. history have won with a margin anywhere near that big. And, you know, I'm just looking forward to Kamala Harris being the first female president of color in this country.
Yeah, that's, I think, the most exciting thing about this. You know, you mentioned Bernie Sanders, and I know that the few people that did stayed home because they were seeing this as a lesser of two evils situation. And to me, of course, that's kind of staggering, seeing who Trump is. But the people were saying yesterday that the Democratic Party needs to take on voter suppression, that the Democrats steal the primaries and then are shocked when the general elections roll around.
Yeah, right. So here you're winning.
So what do I mean by that? Democrats steal the primaries.
Well, they, in Bernie's case, they stripped the voter rolls in both California and New York. And, you know, he was the rightful nominee in 2016. He would have never lost to Trump in 2016, or at least if Hillary had made him vice president, you know. I mean, it's ridiculous, and she stiffed all the all his supporters. I will say, Chris, that in the bigger picture, this election is a major watershed for a number of reasons. Number one is, and because of the COVID, we wound up with a lot of states going to vote by mail. And vote by mail is a really great thing, in major part because it gets us onto paper ballots. You know, for the last 20 years, we've had these insane touchscreen machines, which we call push and pray, where, you know, you stand in front of a computer screen and you push somebody's name and you don't get a paper ballot and you got to hope that your vote went through. I mean, it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But because of the COVID and the vote by mail, everybody got paper ballots, or most people. You know, I'm in L.A., and I got in 2018, and now I got a ballot in the mail. I filled it out. In 2018, I went into a voting center and dropped it off. This year, because of the COVID, I dropped it in a box near a library. I mean, it's a great thing. And we also have great technology for counting these ballots. This is also very new. Most of the ballots in this country have been counted on scanners. And they're relatively simple machines. You take the paper ballot, you scan it in, the machine creates a ballot image, and the image can be counted pretty much immediately. And then you preserve the paper ballots themselves if you want to recount. So in many cases, in Florida, not in California, but in Florida and elsewhere, the election boards insisted on erasing the ballot images. It's ridiculous. The only reason you want to do that is if you want to steal the election. We feel, again, in Florida, that the election was stolen because they disenfranchised over a million ex-felons in Florida. It's ridiculous. The voters in the state of Florida passed a referendum to re-enfranchise people who had been convicted of felonies. And then the state legislature overrode the people's will and said, no, you can't, if you're an ex-felon, you can't vote unless you've paid all your fines, but we're not going to tell you how much you owe. I mean, there are hundreds of thousands of felons, ex-felons, wanting to pay their fines, couldn't find out how much they owed, and so they didn't get a vote. And that was made the difference. That's why Trump carried Florida. It's ridiculous.
Right.
So anyway, there are lots of, as you heard on the call, there are many, many, many things that need to be done to reform our electoral system. Number one is getting rid of the Electoral College. We also have to get rid of gerrymandering, and except in California. In 2006 and 2008, the voters of California approved a commission that sets the districts for the assembly and for the Congress. And this is a multi-party partisan, you know, they're Democrats, Republicans, and Independents on the commission. And by all accounts, they do a pretty good job. So we want this done all over the country.
Yeah.
And then there are other things as well.
Yeah, and yesterday, it was almost chilling. I think it was you that said it, that we never want to have this again. And
never.
And I could tell that you meant it, you know, that
yeah.
this coalition is going to stay together and make these changes that are necessary across this country. And it was thrilling. It was absolutely thrilling to hear it. And also to have people involved in the car on the call from the Lakota People's Law Project and also to hear about the Freedom Democrats, you know, the work that Black voters have done, Black Lives Matter advocates. And it's, you know, it's really exciting, this coalition of people that are trying to make the changes necessary so we actually have one person, one vote in this country.
You know, what a concept. Obviously, we had Howie Hawkins on
yeah.
the call, who was the presidential candidate for the Green Party. I will say that when I lived in Ohio, I worked for the Green Party. I worked, you know, I've always supported the Green Party. But when living in Ohio, I always voted for the Democrats. And I traded my vote. I had friends since I was in Ohio, a swing state, I had friends in safe states, like my sisters in D.C. and friends in Massachusetts, who they voted for the Green Party candidate. Mm-hmm. But this year is my first year voting in California for the presidency, and I voted for Howie, but I had my friends in Ohio vote for Biden.
Yes.
And, you know, what we need going forward is to stop this endless yapping back and forth between the Green Party and the Democrats. And basically, we have to sustain a Green Party. You have to have a third party. The Green Party platform is a great platform. So this year, everybody's yelling at the Greens, well, if you take votes away from Biden, you'll get Trump. So what I advocate, I wrote a piece about it with Bob Patrykas, my co-writer, just saying, look, if you live in Ohio or Pennsylvania or Wisconsin, if you live in a swing state, yeah, vote for Biden. But if you live in New York or California, there's no reason not to vote for the Green Party. So it killed me. One of the hardest things I ever had to do in 2016, I had to vote for Hillary Clinton. I just really didn't like her. But I did that, and I traded my vote. But here in California, I had the liberating experience of voting for Howie, who I've known for 40 years. So what we need to do is, going forward, you need to sustain a Green Party, to have a Green Party platform, and at the same time work to reform the Democrats, and that includes election protection. So
yep.
we're going to continue, Chris. I hope you participate. We're going to continue these meetings, Zoom meetings. We'll probably go down to once or twice a month after January, and I'm going to put together a handbook, and you should be a part of it, on what needs to be done to reform our electoral system.
Yeah.
And, it's not rocket science. We know what needs to be done, pretty much. And and I was also thrilled, by the way, to hear the report from the Lakota, from Tataka Bricka and Danny Paul Sheehan, on the fact that they have set up a phone bank just for the indigenous voters. And typical of our system, the indigenous have been disenfranchised because the states have laws requiring you have a street address.
Yeah.
And people on the res, you know, generally just use post boxes. So we have to change that over the next few years.
Yeah.
Two
yeah.
or four.
It's insane that the first people don't get to vote in this country. You know, one of the things that I was alarmed about that Howie Hawkins from the Green Party said is that the progressive left has put no demands on Biden. There's actually a call to get Pelosi out, and there is a great like the word socialism. I mean, there's some ridiculous movement toward the center, and I was wondering if you could address that.
Yeah, I mean, if you ever want to have me on just to explain what happened to the Socialist Party in this country, it was crushed. You know, we have had a worse president than Donald Trump. His name was Woodrow Wilson. And he was more of a fascist than Trump because he got the opportunity. If Trump had a second term, democracy would have ended in this country. But Woodrow Wilson crushed the Democratic Party in a really dictatorial manner, They killed people. They blew up offices. They put Eugene V. Debs in prison. It's not a pretty picture. Socialism was a major piece of the American political scene until 1920. We had a socialist party. I am convinced that if Woodrow Wilson had not gotten us into World War One after promising to be a peace president and had not crushed the Socialist Party, and put Gene Debs in jail, that Eugene V. Debs, the American Socialist Party, would have been elected president in 1920. Mm-hmm. And this would be a very different country. So we can have that. I can tell you that whole story if you want to have me back sometime. It's okay. In my history book. Anybody who's really interested, I will send you, as I mentioned, a free copy of The People's Spiral of U.S. History, a PDF. Just email me at solartopia@gmail.com. I'll have a finished version after Trump leaves the White House, but send you the one now if you want. So Howie was right. We have to have a third party in this country. You have to have a Green Party. People will say, oh, no, what we should do is reform the Democratic Party. Well, yes, you need to reform the Democratic Party, but you're never going to do it if you don't have a Green Party. If you have one grocery store in town and you go in and complain, they're going to say, oh, yeah. But if you have two and you can go to the other one, if the first one doesn't do what you want, then you're going to get somewhere.
Right.
So people got to stop yelling at the Green Party. And you got to learn how to walk and chew gum at the same time, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to change anything in this country without a clear third party that makes it very unmistakable what we stand for. And that's the Green Party.
Right.
So, people had to vote this time for Biden because if we had Trump, I don't have to tell you, but you still need to maintain a Green Party. You still got to stop yelling at the Green Party and figure it out.
Yeah, and I just like to make it clear for our history, you and I going back, is that nuclear deterrence and nuclear abolition is absolutely critical. You know, him pulling out of the treaties, the START treaty, the Iran nuclear deal, him walking away from the Paris Climate Accords. I mean, basically, had this continued, our grandchildren would not be able to survive on this planet. It's possible they won't be able to anyway, but at least now we have a fighting chance.
Well, I think, nature and history play such games with us. And, exactly at the time that we're getting into a tipping point on, or already at the tipping point on global warming and climate, we have the technology to solve it. When I first started in way back in 1973 on nuclear power, when they asked us, well, if you don't have nuclear, what do you do for the energy? And we kind of thought of a second and said, well, solar and wind. We had no idea what we were talking about. But we've had a technological revolution in the past 45 years in solar and wind power, and they are most definitely the cheapest, the most available, the easiest to move forward with. There are 3,000 square miles of rooftops in the United States that could be covered with solar panels.
Yep.
And we have basically limitless wind power. And yes, windmills do kill a bird or two, but they don't kill fish, and they don't do a whole lot of other things. So we have the means, and now with batteries and electric cars and extremely efficient light bulbs and massive advances in efficiency technology, we have the means to run our planet and to reverse global warming.
And to replant,
We know how to do it. So
yeah.
Here we are.
Yeah. And we're at 269 electoral votes. And so what is your projection in terms of the Biden presidency? Or do we have to really be concerned about Trump's efforts to say that this is not a legitimate election?
Yes, but Donald Trump has so thoroughly alienated so many people. I mean, it's disturbing that half the country voted for him.
Yes.
Or, 47%. I mean,
very.
That's really, really terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, there's another shift going on, which is a generational shift. The millennials are coming of age. Millennials are, I have four millennial daughters and one Generation Z Sea Daughter. And so the millennials are 85 million people, and it's the biggest demographic bump in human history. It's bigger than the baby boom, which was 76 million. And the millennials are, well, when I was in college back in the late 1900s, you know, we were dealing with two major issues. We're dealing with the culture, which was racist, sexist, misogynist, you know, bad music, pop was illegal, all that stuff. And that was the culture. And then the empire. And the empire was the Vietnam War and the American military going off and conquering other countries. So I believe that my generation, the baby boom generation, did a pretty reasonable job of blowing up the culture. You know, drugs, sex, and rock and roll. It was, and we won, I think we really won that battle, especially since we've had a black American president and we'll now have a black female a vice president.
Yeah.
That couldn't have happened. And, you know, we used to muse back in the 60s, well, someday marijuana will be legal and someday we'll have a black president. And we both have happened. But we have not dismantled the empire. And Donald Trump is the last gasp of the American empire, you know, the last embodiment of the nasty, white, misogynist, so-called Christian male. I mean, this guy is so far from a Christian, it's ridiculous, but there you go.
Right.
And so it's up to the millennials now and the Generation Z to take over. They come without the burdens, of mostly, of racism, sexism, and homophobia, and they understand the environment. I know my kids, and you know they're free of a lot of baggage that we had to deal with.
Right.
And so now, hopefully, the millennials will take over and dismantle the empire. That's what we got to do.
Hey, woman,
an ecological society.
You know, I have to shift gears really quick here because we're in a pledge drive and I need to make at least a thin dime for our station because we haven't been able to do much during COVID, and so we're kind of desperate for donations here. And we are wonderful, and we are, you know, the North Valley's best hope for news, public affairs programming, and wonderful music. And so I know you're a programmer. I heard about you and what you were, your trade with for your green vote on KPFK. So I listen to all kinds of stations, but I'd like you to say something to support us.
Oh, God.
To our listeners.
You've got to have your station. There's no other station like the Pacifica stations, no other station like yours. Anybody that donates, I will send personally PDFs of both my history book and my Solartopia book.
Hmm.
You'll get them an email, you know, rapidly. You know, use it as a premium, use it whatever. And the People's Spiral of U.S. History is the history book, and Solartopia, or Green Powered Earth, is the solar book. And, you know, your station is irreplaceable, absolutely essential, got to have it, and people need to support it. There's no doubt about it. You don't have to listen to these lousy commercials. You have great hosts like Chris, and it just needs to be protected.
So
and
just
supported.
Just go to your website, kzfr.org, and click on the donate button and pledge today, or give us a call if you want to talk to a human, 601-340-5937, 601-340-KZFR. Harvey Wasserman, I just want to read you this little thing before you go. Our struggle is not a struggle for a day, a week, a month, or a year. It is a struggle of a lifetime. Never, ever be afraid to make some noise and get in some good trouble, necessary trouble. And in memory of John Lewis, I want to thank you for your work and for the organizing you've done.
Well, I love being a movement person. It's, you know, A.J. Musty once said that the pay's no good, but the work is steady.
This is true.
Chris, anybody that donates, you can put them in touch with me, and I will send them the PDF or the history book and of Solartopia, and just support the station. And Chris, have me back on any time. I'm really thrilled to be on with you.
All right. Well, thank you, and that is very kind and generous, and we appreciate you very much. Take care.
You too. Bye. Keep the faith.
All right. Bye. Okay, Harvey Wasserman. And, you know, I'm always impressed with the amazing people I get to meet as a host on this show. I am also excited to have help with hosting on this show. Jesse Kearns hosts on the third Friday of the month, and I have been holding up my end of the rest of the month, but it's a lot for an old gal, and I'm really, really appreciative that Corey Hunt has gotten involved with this, and I'm going to put on his next offering, which I think is a very important one, considering the Chico elections and what's been happening in our community. And we're quite fractured right now over our city council elections, and it's very unfortunate that we are, that folks couldn't have worked better with one another so that we could have maintained our city council, but it didn't happen. And I hope there's some lessons to be gained. I'm not sure if there are, but maybe, you know, it's an intergenerational thing in some senses. But I'm going to put on the song first, and then we'll go right into the interview. And please, once again, support your community radio station. Think of Playing Dead coming up at 1 o'clock, Sanjay following after that, your Friday afternoon and the fun of it. But right now, we're learning, we're growing, we're filling our heads with stuff that you wouldn't hear anywhere else. It's important. And so we're local, we're resilient, we're different, and we're your community. So support us here, kzfr.org. Go to the donate tab, please. And thanks to Harvey Wasserman, we're going to have some great pledge gifts for you, some good reading. And some good involvement, too, if you want to get involved with election protection for the next time around. All right. And ongoing, get rid of that electoral college. So, anyway, here's music for you.
Here we go again, another election year. Politicians are on a tear. Some are pulling me to go out and vote. Others pushing me to make sure I don't. Well, I'm registered and I vote. Some say when choosing who represents, we should put our trust in the 1%. Cut their taxes to the bone, fill our buckets with the money that trickles down. I see that's 99 for the few and 1 for the rest of us. Yeah, that sounds just about right.
I just want to ask a question. Who really cares? To save a world in despair.
What's good, peoples? Reporting from occupied Machupta territory, it's MC Corey Hunt, Soapbox. As is my consistent energy, I hope you're moving healthily and keeping it sane in these days of seasonal and political adjustment. Self-love is the best love. Stay taking care and being aware of needs and those they affect. In this session, I sit with local writer, farmer, and cultural activist Eric Chrysler. Chrysler is currently a student at Chico State and working at Grub CSA Farms. and what became a pop quiz of sorts, Eric graciously shares some profound perspectives around what he calls the other side, speaking to the freedoms intertwined in the elaborate equation of the struggles of being unhoused. As I pick his brain on topics ranging from homelessness to whiteness, he shares a message of agency with a through line of moral courage that I found thought-provoking and hope you can also. I thank you all for tuning in and hope you gain sapience from this session.
So with all the things going on here in these recent weeks, you know, people feeling up in the air, a question that I'm having for people is what they think is the most impactful action for a common citizen, so we can all kind of pull our ideas there. And you being someone from the community who I've seen speak in a way that I respect, I wanted to use this platform to give you a moment to kind of share your ideas in that regard.
Oh, thank you. The phrase that's been on my mind a lot lately has been moral courage. There's a lot of meaningful actions that people can do, and there's a lot of people leading those actions and a lot of voices out in the field with a lot more experience than me. So I don't necessarily work in the how-tos, but the why-tos. And I think there's a severe shortage in our culture of people who feel deeply connected to the troubles that we're in. And an aspect of being deeply connected to something troubling is that your heart grows in compassion, in bravery, and in empathy. The word courage literally means to be heartful. And I think when you try to put a moral bent to being heartful, it's saying what kind of actions take that heartfulness and make more of it in the world. So a lot of things that are required of us right now are going to be risky. And being connected to the troubles of our time in a heartful manner, I think can set us up to be able to take the risks that are necessary in the times coming. So the development of moral courage, I would say, is the perhaps biggest thing that we can do. And, you know, there's a lot of different aspects to that. One of them is thinking new thoughts. Being able to question your beliefs and understandings about how the system is structured, about who is being impacted and why, about the myths of superiority that exist in America. And we've got a lot of parallel myths of superiority in America. One is the myth of the superiority of our freedom. And I think to deeply question the costs and perhaps deceptions in our understanding of freedom could go a long way. So moral courage is the kind of thing that can help us encounter these systems around them and take the risk to understand them, because it hurts to understand them.
Corey Hunt here, speaking with local activist Eric Chrysler. What do you feel instructed this sense or these thoughts?
For me, it's been a lot of getting in touch with my grief around the state of things. You know, talking about moral courage, one of the reasons you don't do something that takes courage is because you could lose something in the risk. And if you're not familiar with grief, if you haven't made it a companion in your life, if grief isn't the skillful response you choose to take when something happens, that should be otherwise, then you won't be capable of taking the actions necessary to ameliorate the causes of that grief and of that loss. And we have a society that has become so oriented towards comfort for precisely that reason. When things are comfortable, there is very little risk of loss. And therefore, you don't have to meet your grief. So meeting your grief kind of moves things in the other direction. It allows you to begin to metabolize understandings of the things that hurt. And when you understand the things that hurt, you can take action.
Corey Hunt here, speaking with local activist, farmer, and Chico State student Eric Chrysler. That brings up an idea in my head that I hear often, which is white guilt. So what comes to your mind when you hear someone say that?
Gosh.
Feel free. You don't have to speak on it if you don't.
No. It's a perfect question. 'Cause guilt is what you do instead of feeling grief.
Mm.
Right? Guilt is one of the mechanisms where you turn your energy to fix it instead of feel it back on yourself, so that you don't have to deal with the consequences of things. So guilt in the ontology of human feelings is on par with a temper tantrum, but it's just a temper tantrum at yourself, which does nobody any good and really doesn't take you any closer to the thing which you're feeling guilty about, which is growing up in a culture and coming from a people who have done this. And that's something that, you know, is perhaps the biggest part of my work and my grief, is coming into touch with whiteness. Because whiteness, as the kind of color palette of the word implies, is a blankness. It is being addicted to potential to the point that being on this earth doesn't matter. Being from somewhere doesn't matter. So being able to tap into the grief around coming from an orphan culture like our own is one of the antidotes or keys to feeling guilt instead of doing something.
So from that point, how do you differentiate, you know, or so do you identify as white first? And then a follow-up to that would be, if so, then how do you differentiate, you know, your whiteness from your lineage, you know, your genetic background and where you're kin are from?
So the consequences of this culture force me to be white. Mm-hmm. In the sense that whiteness is a thing that is bestowed on me by other people's eyes and have consequences outside of my control.
Mm.
So to claim those consequences as mine, I have to say, yes, unfortunately, I'm white. On the other hand, I can say, I don't identify as white. I don't put my understanding of myself into the frame of whiteness, except as a technology that I carry around that has a mind of its own, that I constantly have to be watching for and trying to control and manage and power down. So, but my identity rests in knowing that there was a time where I came from people who understand how to be human. And the more I lean into that understanding, that I have ancestors at some point who understood the burden and responsibility of being a human, that powers me. And, you know, I have that in a lot of places. I have Mexican ancestors. I have German ancestors, Scottish ancestors, English ancestors. And then I have the whole panoply of cultures that have existed for thousands of years between me and them, who've had sane and less sane ways of living.
Corey Hunt here, speaking with local activist, farmer, and Chico State student Eric Chrysler.
That brings me to an interesting idea. You know, you start talking about people have to eat.
Yeah.
Very simple idea. And it turns into these very ginormous problems. And so then it brings to mind the epidemic of poverty and how it's showing itself here locally in the homeless, unhoused crisis.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, on the topic of homelessness, first you have to talk about some deep issues. I spent a year and a half hitchhiking around the country without working for money and without having money, just taking what I was given and giving whatever services I could offer, items I could offer. And I lived like that for a year and a half and got very used to being free with my time and also being free to give how I wanted. Like, you want my help for 3 days doing this thing? I'm here. Nothing else is tying me down. No other job is tying me down. I can be here for my community immediately. And in 2013, one of the reason that me and my traveling partner came back was because sit-lie was being discussed. Mm-hmm. And we had this experience and we're like, people have no idea once you're on the other side of living the rat race, even if it's horrible, even if life is hard, there is a kind of freedom that is undeniably necessary for life, and it becomes very difficult to live without it. I struggled for years after my time on the road trying to, quote, integrate back into society, and I'm a extremely intelligent white male, cis male, who's pretty well educated. So if I have a hard time getting back in, you can imagine somebody who doesn't have any of that privilege having a difficult time getting back in. So that's one piece. And that's aside completely from issues of mental illness and issues of addiction and issues of an economy that is in collapse. That's what you have to get down to. The homeless are a sign, right?
Yes.
They are in the natural order of things, there's wild. In our natural order of things, our society, our culture, there's the wild, there's the civilized, and there's the feral. And the feral is what happens when civilization stops working. And we call those times dark ages. But if you actually study the Dark Ages, they're some of the richest cultural lives in terms of the village cultures that rise up. It's popular to say the peasants of Europe celebrated holidays 240 some odd days out of the year. When you're in a civilization that's on the edge of collapse, signs of feral people who are going back into the wilderness because society is not meeting their needs, are a sign of the times that we're in. So that's the first thing I see when I see homelessness. I see a sign of the times. And then I think, well, what do we do about the times, not what do we do about the homeless? And I think that's the thought that is so difficult for anyone to think, even service providers, because service providers are looking at a homeless person in front of them and that has needs. And they're trying to create the complex of services to make sure they get those needs met. And then you have people who just want them to disappear. And neither of them are necessarily realistic. You can't patch something forever. And you also can't make real things disappear. They're both kinds of magic. And I think that means you have to strike at the root of things. And if you're going to strike at the root of things, you have to look at the crisis of meaning in our economic system. Jobs are supposed to be a calling. You're supposed to be called from the other side to something in the world that is yours to do, deeply yours to do. Every indigenous culture understood this. That's what it looks like to have a sane approach to homelessness, where you can say the culture is creating homeless people. It's not a lack of houses. It's a lack of a place for everyone. And that's because civilization is crumbling and can no longer house everyone.
Corey Hunt here, speaking with local activist, farmer, and Chico State student Eric Chrysler.
That word, civilization, civil, it's used in such an awkward manner, you know, in my perception, you know, when they say what's civil, you know, because what's civil about, you know, this economy that's just brutal, you know, such a brutal economy. What is your thoughts on just, the, I guess, the etymology and I guess the misuse or the, of that terminology, I guess I would say.
Yeah. So civil comes from the word civitas, which is a word that means city. So another maybe way of phrasing what civil means, it means to not be a village anymore. Civil discourse is the kind of discourse that you create to try to solve the problems of a village that has stopped existing. And that's what these levels of politics, where seven people on a city council represent 120,000 people that are now in this city after the campfire. How does that math make sense? How does that math make sense in and create a an ability for a people to have a reason to be engaged? There's no responsibility that creates the motivation for acting like you're free. I kind of go a little bit deeper. So what is the opposite of being civil? If civil is keeping the peace in a situation where war is inevitable, which is the lack of a village. So the only other answer to life besides being civil is being in a village together. So what does that mean? Well, this goes back to the friendship bit. When, you know, votes without faces decide everything instead of actions face-to-face deciding everything, you know that you've gotten far away from village life. So you have to, like, reverse engineer it. Like I was saying earlier, you have to start creating the institutions to hold face-to-face democratic community in your neighborhood. So, for example, I'm really enamored with the new districting that happened. I was a big part of drafting a citizen's map and working towards a fair districting process. And one of the reasons I love districting is because it creates a mandate to act like a neighborhood, because your political imagination is no longer thinking like a whole city, right? It's uncivilizing it a little bit. It's drawing it back down to its roots. So I would love to see citizen assemblies in every district where these neighborhoods were capable of starting to make decisions, starting to institute participatory budgeting at the district level. So those kinds of institutions are possible if we just break down the units and get willing to be face-to-face with each other. That counters civility and makes it irrelevant.
Corey Hunt here, speaking with local activist, farmer, and Chico State student Eric Chrysler. In closing, give me three questions
you ask yourself that keep you moving forward and grounded, and then give me one cliche.
What is mine to do? That's a question that I ask myself to ensure that I don't try to do everybody's thing. It's hard to move when you think you have to be the hero in every storyline. But if you have one particular thing that can be purpose, I think asking yourself that question, what is mine to do, is a good way of coming into contact with your calling in the world. I ask myself, what am I not thinking about what I'm thinking about? It's good to acknowledge you have blind spots.
Oh, yeah. Critical, man.
And I think in response to having like really big feelings, particularly really dark feelings, I like to ask, what of this is mine and what of this is the culture's? Because a lot of the distraughtness that we carry is a, you know, cultural piece of architecture. It's not a piece of our personal will. So depression is not a failure in depressing times. And being able to recognize that you're not the source of these things is extremely empowering to me. And one cliche, choose your words carefully.
That's solid. That's solid. It's a great way to close this out, man. I really appreciate having you on here, Eric. You're one of the great thinkers that I'm associated with and able to call you friend, at least when you're not around. And I appreciate you coming on, man. I appreciate you, what you're doing in our community and being a shining example of a sapient citizen. And I look forward to seeing you around.
Thank you for having me on, and thank you for being one of the keystones of friendship in this town.
And that concludes this Sapient Session. Thanks again to Eric Chrysler and you all for tuning in. And as always, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. This is Hemp C, Corey Hunt, Soapbox, signing out.
And thanks to Corey Hunt and also to his guest, Eric Chrysler. And that was extremely provocative, thoughtful, and empowering. So I hope people really appreciate the fact that we have a new host on the scene here on the Peace and Justice program. And it's not too late for you to call during our show. Playing Dead's coming up in about 5 minutes. And all you need to do is go to kzfr.org and hit that donate button. And we would really appreciate that. Or you can call a grant standing by 601-340-5937 KZFR, 601-340-KZFR. And I'll be back with you next week. We're going to interview some veterans, and it'll still be pledge drive. So if you didn't have your your checkbook out today, maybe tomorrow, next week, you can help us. That would be so great. And I want to thank Corey Hunt again for wonderful, wonderful interviews. That was so great. Peace and Social Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Quicksilver Courier Service, established in 2010. Quicksilver Courier Service has the flexibility to provide a broad range of delivery services. Quicksilver provides courier service to private individuals, as well as for legal, medical, and business professionals. Visit ChicoCourier.com for quality 24/7 delivery services. And I want to switch you now to the community calendar and stay tuned, as I said, for Playing Dead and your Friday afternoon of enjoyment.
Hey, KZFR listeners, you know what time it is? It's time for the KZFR 90.1 FM Community Calendar. I'm Matt Fidler. There have been some Yahi group outings that I promoted in the past, and I was just informed that those have been canceled and that there will be no Yahi outings till at least spring of 2021. There has not been a reason given, but I assume it has to do with the spike of COVID cases in the area. But there is an art sale at the Chico Ceramic Center parking lot on Saturday, November 7th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Check out some ceramics, blown glass, glass mosaics, and more from over 15 local artists. The event is being held outside with social distancing and masks required. Once again, that's on Saturday, November 7th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at 198 East 11th Street in Chico. That's the Chico Ceramic Center. Enloe Hospital is offering free drive-in flu shot vaccines on Saturday, November 7th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Butte College Chico Center at 2320 Forest Avenue in Chico. Vaccines are given on a first-come, first-serve basis. Please wear clothing that allows the vaccination on your upper arm. Bring a pen to fill out your consent form. They're asking that you complete your consent form legibly and do not block driveways or intersections. Again, face masks are required. For information on these vaccines, you can visit enloe.org or call 530-332-3970. This coming weekend will mark the two-year anniversary of the campfire that changed many of our lives forever. To commemorate this horrible day in our history, the film Joy Will Find a Way is being shown for free in Chico on Sunday, November 8th at 6 p.m. at 1930 Marketplace. Filmed at the Paradise Performing Arts Center, Joy Will Find a Way brought together 150 accomplished and emerging artists in a variety of disciplines in a presentation of mostly original arts expressing the experience of our community through a narrative of remembrance, recovery, and resurgence. Limited amounts of tickets are available, so please reserve yours as soon as possible. Organizers are asking that you arrive at least 30 minutes before showtime to find parking and get settled in. Masks are required when walking outside of your car, and they're asking that you please practice safe social distancing. For theater info, go to merriampark.com/drive-in. For more information about the event, call area code 530-762-1490. In the spirit that all kids deserve exposure to art, the Museum of Northern California Art, MONCA, and the Turner Print Museum are collaborating on an art project geared to ensuring fourth and fifth graders are engaging in art activities at home while we're experiencing these interesting times. 60 art kits will be available for pickup at MONCA 900 Esplanade, November 5th through 8th, and 12th through 15th during museum hours. Students and parent guardian can come up into the museum and observe the actual art pieces that are referenced in the project, plus pick up their kit, provided free thanks to the Turner Print Museum. Students' work will be on display along with the original two examples from the museum's collections at a date to be announced. If you have a virtual event that you'd like on the community calendar, let us know by sending us an email at cc@kzfr.org. This is the KZFR 90.1 FM Community Calendar.
And you are tuned to KZFR, go figure, listener supported, 90.1 on the Big FM worldwide at KZFR.org. And of course, we have the smartphone apps at the App Store, no charge, load them up, take KZFR wherever you go. It's time for Playing Dead. My name's Ray Lager. It is a pleasure to be in here today, the first day of our fall drive. We got a little mini drive. We've kind of broken them up this time. We're going to do